Right. Hi. So my name is Ben Ha. I'm a graduate student in Dr. Todorov and Dr. Senak's lab. And today, I'm going to present you a new framework for understanding goal-directed movements. It's called Infinite Horizon Optimal Control Framework. Okay, so let me first begin by explaining why optimality principle is useful for motor control. Suppose we ask a person to move his hand from point A to point B. It's a one-dimensional reaching problem. And in principle, the person has an infinite number of movement trajectories that he can generate, such as these. However, in reality, in most cases, the humans tend to generate highly stereotyped movements, such as this. And the fundamental problem in motor control is exactly this. How does the brain select a few number of trajectories out of infinite possibilities? And optimality principle provides you the correct approach to tackle this problem. Now, the question is, what is the quantity that the brain tends to optimize? So typical movements tend to be smooth and efficient. And people found out that you can generate realistic human movements by minimizing the energy expenditures used by the muscles, or minimize the torque change in the movement, or minimize jerkiness in the movement, which is time differentiation of acceleration. So there is some sort of differences between which cost function you use, but then for my purpose, it doesn't make much difference, and they are quite similar in some general sense, in the sense that they promote laziness of movement. So I'm going to call all those three types of costs all together as energy cost. So minimizing energy costs tend to generate realistic movement. So that solves the problem, right? Oh, is that right? In fact, that's quite far from being true, because I mean, it's quite intuitive if you think about it. If all we care is about is saving energy, then why do we move at all, right? So the model has to include explanation for motivation to move to generate movement. Okay, so the classic models, previous models. Included motivations in terms of constraints. So these constraints specify. This doesn't work. When the movement should end, the terminal time, and also how the movement should end. That's the terminal state constraint. So only those trajectories that satisfy these constraints are allowed to compete. And among these trajectories, the one that accumulates least amount of energy gives a good approximation to real movement. So this model, this framework is quite simple. However, there are some problems. So this framework includes some wrong hypotheses. So in real life, how the movement ends is not a given constraint, but it's part of a control problem the brain must solve. So as a consequence, these models fail to explain how the brain uses the sensory feedback to achieve high accuracy movements. And there are some practical limitations to model too. So these type of models do not work for stochastic problems or a problem that involves motor learning, because these constraints do not make sense in such circumstances. So I'm going to present a new framework which does not include any terminal constraints. So in this case, movements are defined in infinite stretch of time. And so I call it infinite horizon formulation. So in this case, motivation is provided by local reward there's some positive reward near the target location, which is beer. And in this case, now the principle is to maximize a reward while minimizing energy, and that will give prediction for what the actual movement should be. So I'm going to give you a more further illustration of this framework by focusing on the same 1D reaching problem, but using kinematic model. So these kinematic models only care about the movement of the hand and forget about the rest of the body, how the muscle works, and the joint is kind of ignored in here. So it's quite simple. And to make it simpler, I'm going to assume a second order model. And that means that the state vector includes position of hand and speed, and the controller signal is the acceleration. And the energy cost is square of this controller signal, which is square of the acceleration. And now the total cost includes the energy cost, and it should also include the reward. And since cost and rewards are opposite to each other, I'm going to flip it around and add that to the total cost. And I call that the state cost, because it is dependent on the state variables. Now, the goal of the IHOG model is to minimize the integration of the total cost from now to infinite future. Okay. Well, there is one problem here. The thing is, we don't have the right state cost yet. So we have to first find what the correct state cost should be, and then we can move along. The condition for the correct state cost is the one that gives the best approximation to finite finite horizon or finite ad hoc model, because we already know that that model provides a good approximation to real movements. So here I'm showing some comparison of the prediction of the movements for several different state costs. So here are the state costs, and here's the optimal trajectories, position, speed, and control, and acceleration. Here, the dashed lines are the prediction from the finite horizon constraint model. And as you can see, those solid lines have some systematic deviation from this dashed line for these state costs. So it turns out what we need is a state cost which has this quadratic shape near the target, but it saturates for a large deviation. And as you can see, for these state costs, this infinite horizon framework matches the finite horizon framework almost perfectly. Okay. So this is the total cost for that saturating state cost. This is the energy cost, and this is the state cost. Here, this theta is a transfer function, which grows linearly for small input, but it saturates for large input. And combined with this quadratic input for theta, it generates this saturating cost. And the coefficients here for each terms are determined in a way such that the stuffing behavior near the target is fastest converging toward the target without any oscillation. So that corresponds to this blue line. So these coefficients may look somewhat complicated when you first look at it, but in fact, they are quite simple. So you can think of them as a scaling term, such that if you define a new coordinate system, like here, x divided by d, there's two parameters, d and gamma. D has a dimension of length, it's a length parameter, and gamma has dimension of 1 over time. So if you have a new coordinate system where x divided by d and t is time is multiplied by gamma, these new coordinates are, in fact, dimensionless. And in this new dimensionless coordinate system, the total cost has very simple form. Okay. And as a result, the optimal solutions have very simple natural expression in this new coordinate system. So I'm going to use them from now on. So here are some plots, optimal trajectories. So here's position, speed, and acceleration. And one thing you should notice is that there are these inflection points And that happens when where the state cost changes from a flat saturated region to a quadratic region. And I call that boundary as a target boundary. Okay. So when you're outside of target boundary, when you're just beginning to move, this trajectory is outside of the target boundary is exactly the same as finite horizon trajectories. But once you're inside the target boundary, then the trajectory become exponentially converging toward the target. And another thing you can notice is that the movement duration is an increasing function of movement amplitude or the initial distance from the target. And that's plotted here, amplitude versus duration. And so this shows that this IHOG model can give you prediction about how much the duration, the movement is going to take. And I'm going to use that later on. Okay, so here's a cool photo, a cool picture. So in order to understand the full dynamics about what's going on in this infinite horizon model, it's important to see what's happening in state space. So here, the horizontal axis is a position, and vertical axis is speed, and the target state is given at the center here, the origin. And the optimal trajectories are plotted as curves in this state space. And another thing you can notice is this background color. And this color represents, this grayscale represents the remaining time until hitting the target boundary. So you can see as you move along these optimal trajectories, the color becomes darker and darker toward the center. So I don't have much time to explain all the features in here, but I'll focus on one thing. So if you choose one position, such as negative 4, and move along the vertical axis, then you can see the color, background color goes darker and darker as you move up. So that means if you have positive speed toward the target, then it will take less time until hitting the target boundary. And that's quite sensible, right? But then there's one remarkable thing happening if you go a bit too positive. Okay, there is suddenly the optimal trajectories take a very long overshooting trajectory, and it takes a lot longer time to hit the target. So this is one genuine prediction by this IHOG model, which is the existence of this hard threshold boundary for this overshooting behavior. And so this is something that can be measured experimentally. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to the third order model. So the second order model is just a toy problem. But then in literature, it's already known that the third order model gives quite good approximation to real reaching movements. So here, the state variable includes hand position and speed and acceleration. And control variable is jerk. And here's the total cost. Well, so I'm going to go quick here. So you can see here already that the speed profile is quite similar to the actual data and also the acceleration profile. So this is a good description. Yes. On the right, yeah. It's, yeah, it's blur. So the IHOG model can also give prediction for movement duration. So in empirical observations, the movement duration is known to depend on movement amplitude as well as the target size. So it takes longer time to reach the target if the target is smaller. And in fact, duration is a function of the ratio between amplitude and target width. And this empirical relationship is called the Fitts' law. So here I'm plotting the duration data, and on the x-axis is the log of amplitude divided by width. And here are the data, and this different color curves represents data collected with using different target size. And so you can see that these lines overlap nicely onto each other. And here is the prediction from the IHOG model. So for generating this figure, I only used two parameters for fitting. There's D and gamma. The gamma was fit to be some number. But the importantly, D, which is the length parameter, was said to be equal to the target width. So this result gives two important implications. One, it supports the it's a supporting evidence for IHOG model. And secondly, it gives some a physical meaning to this length parameter. Okay? Before it was simply a width of the state cost. Now we know that it's supposed to be the target width for reaching. So now the remaining question is, what is gamma then? Third order model.
Did
yeah.
Make a
Sorry.
Did you make a
yeah. Uh huh. Okay. So gamma acts as a relative weighting term between energy and cost. So you can think of it as a height of the reward. So high gamma leads to fast movements, and small gamma leads to slow movements. And there is possibility that this gamma parameter may correspond to the tonic level of dopamine neurons in the brain. So in Parkinson patients, we know that, let me see. Well, so dopamine neurons have two different firing patterns. So the phasic, the transient activity is known to reflect the prediction of reward error. Prediction error of reward. But then the tonic level is necessary for initiating movements. So for example, Parkinson patients, they have a very low tonic dopamine level because of cell death. And as a result, they suffer from slow or no movements at all. And on the other extreme, the patients with Tourette syndrome, they have highly elevated D2 receptor affinity to dopamine. And as a result, they suffer from uncontrolled ballistic movements. So there is possibility that the brain, and for normal subjects, the brain might regulate the dopamine tonic level to control the overall speed of movement. And this can be, this hypothesis can be tested by continuously measuring the tonic dopamine level while the subject is moving, making faster or slow movements. So I do not know that for sure. I'm not very familiar with the dopamine literature too, but this is going to be our beginning project. Yeah. So okay. So I'm going to give you one more experimental evidence for supporting this IHOG model. So in this work, these authors, Conley Cording and Daniel Wolpert, developed a new technique for directly measuring the internal state cost of human subjects. And as a result, they discovered that the internal cost function has quadratic shape for when the error is small, but it saturates for large error. And here's their data. So they compared several candidate error functions, a cost function. And here, this black line is the data. And the best fit is given by this blue line, which is given by the saturating cost function. So this is consistent with the internal cost function that our theory predicted. Okay. And I'm going to end my talk by giving comparison to several other models that were previously suggested. So in the beginning, I mentioned the constrained finite horizon model. And it included a terminal time and terminal state constraint. And because of that, it suffers from rigidity. Okay? So it cannot be applied to either a stochastic or modal learning problem. And on the other hand, our model, the IHOC model, is completely unconstrained. And it's very flexible. It can be applied to any kind of motor control problem. And in between, there are some other type of models as well. I call them time-relaxed or state-relaxed finite horizon framework. And these two models, these two frameworks, unconstrains one of the constraints. So this one constrains the time constraint, and this one unconstrains the state constraint. And each of these framework gives some more flexibility compared to the original constraint model, but still, it has several limitations. And our IHOG model, this framework gives you some general view to unify all of these models all together. And you can think of each of these models as some special case falling out from some limit of this IHOG model. Okay, so I don't have much time to go through all this, but then one thing I'm going to show you is that, well, so in reality, our body is a stochastic system. So our deterministic approach will eventually fall down in some limit. So in stochastic generalization, I can show that this stochastic IHOG model will converge or will reduce to what's called constrained minimum variance model. And this is one of the most influential model in motor control community in last decades for two reasons. So first, it was the first model to explain how noise affects our movement control. And secondly, it was amazing that this model could explain almost any kind of movement generation, regardless of which body part is being used. Either it works for arm reaching problem, and it also works for saccadic eye movements. And our IHOG model can give an explanation for why this minimum variance works so generally. So it's, yeah. Anyways, so here is another set of control models in stochastic domain, and here's the constrained minimum variance model, and here's the stochastic IHOG model. And again, all of these motor framework can fall out as some special limiting case of the stochastic IHOG model. And therefore, this becomes the most powerful one out of all the others. Okay, thank you.